Thanks, Brad. Good afternoon, everybody. Just wanted to point out that in Canada, we're under the same sort of austere spending restrictions for government agencies as you folks are and everybody in Europe these days. So the fact that I was able to travel from Toronto to be here this afternoon is indicative of how important my ministry believes social media is to our communications practices. In a time when every penny being spent is scrutinized, they did want me to come here and be able to share with you what we're doing and to learn from what everyone else is doing. It happened that, on the way here, I was also invited to speak to a social media conference last week in Rochester, New York. And it was strictly on social media. It had nothing to do with this sort of thing. But I got in after a six-hour train ride from Toronto to Rochester on Amtrak, and got in late in the afternoon, unpacked, and then went down to the bar for a beer. And there was a father and son sitting there who ran their own pest control business. And we started chatting, and they said, well, what do you do? What brings you to Rochester? And I said, well, I'm Bruce Skeet, the social media planner for the Ontario Ministry of Labour. I said, that's sort of like a Department of Labour in a state government here. We look after occupational health and safety, employment standards, which are things like minimum wage, fair workplace practices, and that sort of thing, and labor relations. The one thing we don't do is unemployment insurance. And so I said, and I'm in charge of our social media channels. And he looked at me, the father looked at me, and he said, OSHA? I said, yeah. He said, OSHA? I hate OSHA. Love Toronto. Love train travel. Hate OSHA. Every time those guys come near me, it costs me money. And I said, yeah, we really don't like having the reputation of being the guys who wear the black hat all the time, but we know it's out there. So that's something we're trying to change with our social media presence. We're actually trying to be very, very helpful to both employers and employees, because the way I built this, and we're on Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube, is as a public service. We're not too much government to government or even within our own ministry or so on. I really built it as a public service. Because back, we actually started looking at this in the fall of 2008. We were looking at this while everyone was looking at their bank accounts going down as well. And I was actually the media relations guy for our ministry at that time. And I noticed one thing that was being repeated time and time again in the media and everywhere else was that more and more people, just average citizens, were getting their news and information online and less from old-fashioned, old-style news outlets such as radio, television, and newspapers. Now, I'm an ex-newspaper man myself, so you can imagine how that made me feel. But it was a reality, and so I started talking to my manager and my branch director. I'm in the communications and marketing branch of the ministry. And I said to them, I said, you know, look, this is where the public is going, and since we basically, our stakeholders are every working person in the province of Ontario, we need to follow where these people are going, because if they're talking about their work experiences on Twitter and on Facebook or something, we need to be there, A, to be part of the conversation, to be an authoritative presence who can perhaps correct things that are misunderstood in these conversations, or even outright falsehoods, if that came to that. And as well, we need to be there to see what people are saying about their workplaces. So we need to be there for the intelligence gathering ability as well. With the recession in the fall of 08, of course, that move, that shift to people getting their news and information online dramatically increased as traditional newsrooms either reduced in size because advertising money was drying up, or they were shutting down entirely. And you can probably think of a local newspaper or radio station or a television station near you that doesn't exist anymore. And the same thing was happening to us. Just at that time, around Christmas, a coworker in a different department of the government told me about Twitter. And it's actually a department that deals with forest fires and floods. It's called Ministry of Natural Resources. So they were using it as an emergency channel for to getting information out not only to their own staff, but to the public in certain areas, if there was a flood warning or if there was a forest fire, that sort of thing. And I thought, you know, if eyeballs are moving from our traditional media, then us continuing just to put out news releases and hoping that the local newspapers will print them and then people will read them, if that is waning, then Twitter sounds like a spot where we might be able to get some public good out of this. Because we produce a bunch of news releases every year, maybe 100, 120 or so, on various pieces of legislation or new initiatives or anything else that's going on. But we also, our health and safety inspectors, and there are 400 of them in a population of about 6 or 7 million people in Ontario, total population of about 13 million people. Over 415,000 square miles, by the way. You can fit the UK and a good part of Europe inside the province of Ontario. So one of the things that we do, because we're able to haul people into court for violations of the Occupational Health and Safety Act, is we produce a lot of court bulletins, which are short stories, one-pagers, that are the outcomes of those court cases. And they tend to be fairly popular, not with the general public so much, unless there's been a fatality and a spectacular fine, very high-profile thing. But labor lawyers like them because it allows them to keep up on what's going in the law, what the latest decisions are. Human resources people. So we do about 700 of those a year. And Twitter would be the perfect way of sending out these headlines with a link to the full news release, the full one-pager on our website, and getting them out to individuals, be they labor lawyers or people who are interested or occupational health and safety consultants and so on, directly. I no longer had to wait for newsletters. I no longer had to wait for people to read the newspaper. If people had an iPod or anything like that, I could get this news from us directly into their own individual hands, so that even if a lawyer was in the middle of a case and stopped at lunchtime to look, you might go, oh, this could be useful to me. We started off with Twitter. We decided to use it as a one-way channel to begin with because back then, this was in the spring of 2009, everybody in the upper echelons was very, very nervous about getting into social media because it meant you cannot control the message. And certainly that's what politicians and political organizations really need to do, is to control the message and hold on to it very tightly. So we broke them in gently. And we ran that Twitter feed as a broadcast channel pretty much for about a year. Last July, not the one past, but a year and a half ago, we launched into Facebook. And now, and I know I'm conscious of the amount of time I have, our Facebook, the wall tends to be a place where citizens come to ask us questions about things that have happened in their daily work lives. A lot of them are employment standards related, such as, I worked the long weekend and I'm not sure I got paid correctly. But we also have people coming to us with health and safety questions. A lot of people actually coming to us and asking about harassment and workplace violence. And we do have an anti-harassment and workplace violence section in our legislation. Get a lot of people coming to say, I've got a boss who's driving me nuts. I can't take it anymore. I've gone to my doctor. I'm on pills now just to get up in the morning. What can I do? In any sort of situation like this, we have found an easy and safe way for us to be able to help the public individually without tripping over privacy laws or getting into legalities that might snarl us. One thing we do, by the way, is to always tell people, we actually have a terms and conditions page. It's the rules of the sandbox. And we say, you cannot name your employer, the person or the company, because we just don't want to get into that legal hassle. But people will come and they'll ask those sorts of questions. We will first give them, it's a two-part answer, a link to the applicable information on our website. We always use our website as the mothership. It's Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter are ways that we can reach out to where people are, but bring them back to the detailed information we need. Second part of any answer is a telephone number where they can speak to a live human being at our ministry in one of our call centers if they need something more specific to their situation than what we have on our website. Of course, you can use Facebook for other things. That's mostly what our wall is for. You, of course, can post photos on Facebook. That's where we post all our posters. And we've got a growing library there of occupational health and safety posters. We also tweet them. But we keep that standalone library there so that anybody who wants one can, and they're actually downloadable quality. So if you've got a color printer, you can download it right off there, and we will, every time we have a new one, we'll tweet and we'll Facebook and say, hey, check out our new poster, download it and post it. The same with YouTube. and where we put a lot of informational videos that are sort of what to expect when one of our health and safety inspectors comes to your sort of workplace, mining, auto mechanic garages, if you're operating high-rise cranes, anything like that. Here's what our inspectors look for. So I was explaining all of this to this fellow in Rochester. And he said, oh, that could be useful. I said, yeah, see, we don't want to just wear the black hat. We're there to provide information to the public, be they employers or employees, and we're not siding on one or the other. Twitter now, we're much more active on, and I'm not sure how much more time I have.
About 10 more minutes.
Sorry?
10 more minutes.
10? That's good. in our communications branch, we have it set up to sort of an advertising agency style, and we have one person who's dedicated to working with our program and policy staff on employment standards and another one on occupational health and safety. And I asked her, Jan, who looks after occupational health and safety, to put together all the various ways that we are using, particularly Twitter now, to reach out to the health and safety community. And it's interesting, the reason I say Twitter is because we find that on Facebook, generally, it's individual citizens coming to us asking questions about their own personal lives, such as the one I mentioned. Somebody else actually wrote very simple stuff, too, but it's very personal and important to them. Someone wrote and said, we know that there's a legislated regulation that your first aid kit has to be checked at regular intervals and it must be done by the company. We know that we've heard that some companies are contracting this out. Is that allowed? Is it okay? Well, we were able to give this person an answer. Twitter, we find our chief audience is professionals. It's, as I said, labor lawyers, it's HR people. It's health and safety consultants. It's all a lot of small business people or people who are working in those departments of larger corporations. And those are the people that we've got following there. So we've seen that that's really where we should concentrate our efforts to get information out in health and safety. So what Jan had put together for me is sort of a list of all the various ways that we use Twitter. We tweet both general and very targeted messaging, for instance, safety in mining or infection control in healthcare, linking to resources on our website. We reinforce our leadership role in occupational health and safety through regular messages about what she calls foundation issues, so key hazards like falls and MSDs. We use it for seasonal messages. We put out heat stress alerts as well. And because we've got social media now, we can do that. If there's, you know, if somebody says a heat wave is coming on Thursday, we can put something out on Tuesday and again on Wednesday saying, hey, if you're working outdoors when this heat wave hits, be careful. Flu season as well. We also use it for immediate or critical information like hazard alerts. And social media supports the delivery of information on other channels. Nothing goes out on social media alone. It's fast, and we enjoy great cooperation from our internal clients. That means the program and policy people in our own ministry, because they're seeing the results. We connect them with them regularly about announcements and events and work this into an overall schedule for the ministry's announcements. And the nice thing is, they don't approve our final messaging. We write in the communications branch and then tweet or post on Facebook. And yes, because we are Canadian, we do it in two official languages. Day-to-day management of gathering suitable content has become an efficient process and doesn't take a lot of time. Because we're generally using pre-approved material that's already up on the website and just repurposing it, we don't have to go through five layers of approvals. For our clients, this makes it very easy. They send us the raw information, and we get it out via Twitter or Facebook or both. And while we enforce health and safety legislation and regulations, Jan is saying the same thing I was telling this fellow in Rochester, we're not just bad guys who show up, find problems, and shut you down. We offer information, tools, and resources to help workplaces become compliant. And we announce each of these initiatives through social media. We also direct traffic to resources on our website and on YouTube. We always cross-promote everything. So if we have a new video on YouTube, we'll tweet the hell out of it, we'll put it up on Facebook, and vice versa. We generate interest in events and training sessions that aren't necessarily ours, but are our health and safety partners, health and safety organizations, and so on. And that actually helps build registrations for webinars and conferences. Again, maybe not ones that we run, but we want the people who are following us to know what our partners are doing as well. And we get to approach subjects from many different angles and have a different response or a different tweet or Facebook post for each one. For instance, with young workers over the summer, we addressed our messaging to parents by saying, don't assume your kids are safe at work. And then other tweets that were worded for employers, supervisors, and the young workers themselves. We support our health and safety partners, as I said, by retweeting their messages as well. And we've built subscriptions to news delivered in other ways, such as email newsletters and online news information that may be on our website. We've still got a long way to go. On YouTube, we've been posting videos. We're now just about to get into podcasts, which may sound rather old-fashioned, but we are government after all, so we tend to follow rather than lead the way. But we find that our staff really likes being able to follow us on Twitter as well. We've got a staff of 1,500 people spread across the province. As I said, that's about 415,000 square miles in more than 20 different offices. So Twitter helps our staff stay informed as well. And we see these three channels as a really nice set because Twitter is news, Facebook is discussion, come and talk to us, and YouTube is our educational channel. And they make a really nice triumvirate that, as I say, we cross-connect all the way we can. And we've got the little chiclets for each one on our website page so that people know that we're there. And I think I'm just about out of time.
Okay, sounds good.
Thank you.
We have time for a question or two, if there's any, for Bruce.